communications media technology such as a telephonic or video conferencing as provided by the Florida statutes. As mayor, pursuant to the authority granted to me by the city charter, I declared a public emergency on March 15, 2020 in response to COVID-19. Furthermore, pursuant to those powers and the governor's executive order, I suspended all city requirements that require a physical quorum to be present to conduct this meeting and authorized that this meeting be conducted by communications media technology under the city's state of emergency proclamation for virtual meetings executed on April 3, 2020. The city manager, pursuant to the authority granted him by the city's initial state of emergency for COVID-19, has closed City Hall to the public. Therefore, no member of the public will be allowed into the community wing of City Hall during this meeting. Notice that this meeting was going to be held by the communication media technology and not a physical location was posted on the city's website at least 5 days ago. The notice provided that those members of the public needing reasonable accommodation to participate in the meeting could contact the city clerk for assistance by noon on Monday, April 13, 2020. Access to this meeting is being provided via live stream on the city's website at www.palmcoastgov.com and by calling 386-223-1690. Today is April 14th, 2020, and it is 9 a.m. Please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Mayor Holland.
Here.
Vice Mayor Klufas.
Present.
Councilmember Branquino?
Here.
Councilmember Cuff? And Councilmember Howell?
Here.
Okay, we'll now move to agenda item number D, which is public participation. Public participation will work as follows. As in all council members' meetings, if you speak during item D, you will not be allowed to speak under item G. Item G is reserved for speakers who did not have an opportunity to speak under item D. Prior to calling in with your comments, if you are listening from website, please mute those. So when you call in your comments, there is no interference. If you would like to participate in public comments, call 386-223-1690. You will need to hit the *9 to raise your hand to provide your comments. You will be acknowledged by being unmuted, and you will hear a message that you have been unmuted. Please begin by stating your name clearly for the record. You will have 3 minutes to speak. When there is 15 seconds left to your 3 minutes, you will hear a beep, and then at the end of your 3 minutes, you will hear another beep. And you will be muted at that time. You will be disconnected from that meeting. All callers will have the opportunity to speak. Please be aware there may be a short pause as we switch the next caller. We will now begin. Please state your name for the record, and your 3 minutes will begin. No public comments at this time. I will close public comment and move it to agenda item number E under presentations. Agenda item number one is presentation of the annual investment report.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, City Council. As required, we are presenting today the annual investment report, and we have Scott Stitcher here from PFM Asset Management and Helena Alves also to answer questions.
Good morning.
Good morning. This is Scott Stitcher with PFM. I was pausing there to see if Helena had anything to say before I jumped in. I will step back and
go ahead.
See if Helena has any. You sure?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's try and share my screen here and see how that works. I do have a presentation I was hoping to share with you, and Good morning to everyone. I hope everyone is doing well, staying healthy and safe. Let's see, this appears to be everything but what I want to show you. Let me see here. Maybe I have too many things open. Okay, here we go. Thank you for your patience. Let's see if I can close this window so I can see my slides. How's that appear for everyone? Is everyone able to see that?
Great.
I can.
Good. Let's see if I can minimize that. Okay. So I have put together a presentation for this morning's meeting. I guess before I jump in, I should really ask how much time you would like me to take. I want to be respectful of everything that you all have to cover today.
The way the workshop will work, and because we're doing it remotely, I would just request, you go through your presentation, and then we will take questions from the council at that time.
Okay.
Any further discussion required, we will not be taking action as this is a workshop. There's no public comment during this portion of the agenda. So we will follow your direction as far as the length of your presentation.
Okay. I appreciate that, Mayor. I will keep my comments reasonable here. There's roughly 19 pages. I don't intend to speak to every single one. I think the more important part will be, the question and answer and communication amongst us this morning. And I just have to step back quickly and just say and commend your staff at the city and the city manager. Helena and Mr. Morton have been very good about keeping the lines of communication open. We've had some conversations around what's going on in the economy, what's going on in the markets, how the portfolio is held up during this time. And I would just encourage that we keep those lines of communication up going forward. So, again, thanks to Helena, her staff, and to the city manager. I've put together a number of slides around what is taking place right now and what that may mean going forward. There's obviously a lot of uncertainty and a lot of guesswork going into this right now. Unfortunately, a lot of the economic data that we'll be getting for the first quarter really is sort of a moot point. I'd say the most important data point we've been getting is around initial jobless claims. Those seem to be the only thing that's really accurate and telling at this time. But obviously, we'll continue to keep our finger on the pulse of the economy and the markets and then the health crisis. So as you see on this slide, it is a three-pronged crisis that started with the pandemic. The overwhelming healthcare issue that's taking place around the world, number of cases and deaths related to this virus continue to grow, but we're seeing some signs of light in the world. Because of that, you basically saw the economy, not only in the U.S., but abroad, basically shut down as social distancing measures and shelter-in-place orders occurred again around the world. Related to the other two items, the pandemic and the shutdown of the economy, were the effects on the financial markets, where we saw treasury yields fall and stock prices do the same thing. They plummeted while we saw credit spreads and volatility soar. And we're going to take a closer look at credit spreads here in a little bit. But it's just kind of crazy times, a lot of uncertainty. And again, we'll continue to keep our finger on the pulse and communicate openly with the city as things progress. Quick snapshot, this page is already a little bit dated, but we rank the number of cases and number of deaths by the size of the economy. So the United States now, again, this is dated, we're showing this slide at 10,000 deaths. Fast forward to today, and we're now over 23,000 deaths. So the U.S. now ranks number one, the number of deaths due to coronavirus, a death rate of roughly 4%. Again, I mentioned a light at the end of the tunnel. Looking at the U.K., France, Italy, and Spain, and we're starting to see some improvement there. Spain reported the fewest number of new cases since March 20th. The health minister there seems to think cases may have peaked. France is extending its lockdown into mid-May, and they've even hinted at opening schools sometime after that. We see cases falling in Germany. We see cases falling and slowing in the UK. So maybe these lockdown measures seem to be working. You know, again, we'll continue to monitor these number of new cases and number of deaths and hope to see some sort of peak and then slowing as this progresses. You know, we've seen fiscal stimulus. The government is doing all it can to put a Band-Aid on the economy for the time being. They announced their $2 trillion stimulus package last week, and you can see where some of this money is going in terms of direct relief, checks being cut and going out to households directly, increasing unemployment benefits by extending unemployment benefits, as well as increasing the amount paid out. There's some aid to states, tax deferrals also, and taxpayers like ourselves being able to wait until July to file and pay taxes. You can see some loan packages down below, loans to small businesses, loans to larger businesses, to the airline industry, and then some supplemental dollars there to make up that $2 million package. On top of fiscal stimulus, we also have seen a number of actions taken by the Fed as they dust off their playbook from the 2008-2009 financial crisis. And again, they're throwing everything at this to prop up the economy. So everybody seems to be doing their part. This slide just shows you that, you know, we really were on firm footing leading into the first quarter of 2020. GDP growth was stellar, averaging about 3.2%. We had entered the longest expansionary period in U.S. history. Consumer confidence was quite high. Home sales continued to be robust. And then as we saw from a job growth standpoint, we averaged over 220,000 new jobs monthly in 2019. As you can see there, 2010s were the best decade for job growth on record. That now thrown into into question, as the Fed chair mentioned the other day, that we're moving with alarming speed from 50-year lows of unemployment to what will likely be very high, although temporary levels, and we'll look at another slide here in a little bit about what that means from an employment standpoint. So looking forward, we've seen a significant downturn in the U.S. economy. Economists expect it to be basically immediate. What we're showing you here is a range of GDP estimates by economists. So some expect a very sharp contraction followed by a quick rebound. All that is obviously up for debate on whether this is a V-shape, U-shaped, a prolonged downturn. Really, there's a lot of uncertainty, and it's all driven around whether or not a cure is found and whether or not a vaccine is found for this particular virus. But as you see, we're expecting a pullback in the first quarter, but the major pullback will come as we see the full effect of the economy being shut down in the second quarter. The average, again, the average of amongst economists is a pullback of roughly 30%. Again, you note that in the third quarter, economists predict that we will bounce back into positive territory. So the thought is we will have a recession, a deep recession, not a depression, which is a prolonged recession. But again, the forecast now is for a large and immediate pullback in the U.S. economy. I mentioned job losses, and right now that really the only, I think, data point that we can really point to as being current and accurate is the initial jobless claims. And that's what we're looking at here on the chart on the left-hand side. So we see initial claims for the week ending March 27th, and it rises to roughly 6.6 million. You know, at the end of March 21st, you see down below, it stood at 3.3 million. So to put that into perspective, initial claims during the Great Recession peaked at roughly 665,000 jobs, and that's notated there with the little circle and the peak during the Great Recession. And then previous to that, the all-time high was roughly 695,000 jobs in October of 1982. So we've blown through those historical peaks and continued to add to these initial jobless claims. And you note here over to the left that it says that these 10 million new jobless claims imply an unemployment rate of roughly 10% at the end of the March. So in 2 weeks, we got to an unemployment rate, an implied unemployment rate of 10%. What took us anywhere from, I'll call it 6 to 8 months to get to that number during the last recession. So it's amazing how far we've fallen and how quickly we've fallen. You also note to the chart over here to the right that the labor market shed more jobs in March alone than in any month since the 2007 and 2009 recession. And obviously, a lot of this is being driven by the fact that the economy has been shut down and this being a service-based recession. The first, which I have to point out, is the first service-based recession that we've ever seen. So restaurants shut down, hotels, travel basically shut down. All this stuff, again, really impacting the general health of the economy and the workforce. So what does this mean to the overall economy? What does the interest rate backdrop look like? And then we're going to look at how this impacted the various sectors in which we invest on your behalf. But slide 8 basically looks at, on the left-hand side, looks at the yield curve. And we look at the gold line from the end of the fourth quarter to the blue line at the end of the first quarter. And the real takeaway here is on March 3rd, the Fed made an emergency 50 basis point, 0.50% interest rate cut. And then they did so again on March 15th, where they made an emergency 100 basis point cut, a full percentage cut. So they cut interest rates by 1.5%, basically taking the overnight rate to a range of 0 to 0.25%. During that time, they also announced a $700 billion buyback of treasuries and mortgage-backed securities in an effort to prop up the economy, what they call a quantitative easing. You see the impact on the three-year treasury yield here. Again, the yield on that three-year roughly at a 0.29%. We'll talk more about what this means from a standpoint of your portfolio here in a second. Additionally, the other thing we saw was in February, we began seeing yield spreads widen and then accelerate in March. And you'll note that asset backs followed by corporates and then mortgage-backed securities in that order saw the spread widening during the quarter, actually really in a matter of we'll call it 2 to 3 weeks. So things to note here that although the spreads have widened, they're not nearly as wide as they were during the Great Recession. I'm pointing you out here in 2009, and you can see that the spreads, although wide, are nowhere near where they were during the Great Recessionary period. Now, what is different this time is at the speed at which these spreads did widen. So there was not a lot of notice, and spreads widen out dramatically. Along with the spread widening, came a widening in the bid-ask spread. So, you weren't being compensated for selling something, and you were paying more for buying a particular security, so much so that it really just did not make sense to trade in this environment. So what does all this mean? 150 basis point decrease in yields, spread widening amongst what we call spread product, asset backs, corporates, mortgage-backed securities. What does that mean from a performance standpoint? So what we're showing you on slide 10 is a snapshot, and I'll point you to the 1 to 3 year indice. It's most reflective of your portfolio. That's what your portfolio is benchmarked against. And the bottom line is there was a flight to quality during the quarter, as you would expect. As the world is facing a pandemic, the economy is shutting down, the financial markets see an increase in volatility, all that uncertainty always leads to a flight to quality. Quality being U.S. Treasuries and U.S. agencies. So you can see in absolute terms, it was not a bad quarter for fixed income investors that were invested in treasury and agency. Treasury up 2.81%, agency up 1.95%. What did do poorly was asset-backed securities and corporate securities. They returned negative returns in absolute terms during the quarter. As a matter of fact, you note that between corporates and treasuries, there's over 300 basis point spread in return. So, again, we'll talk about why this is important here in a second when we look at your performance. There's a lot going on in this slide. It's probably more for review at a later date, but I think that the takeaway here is that I would get you to focus on the black dots because that's our current outlook on the various sectors listed on page 11. And as you would expect, the theme is, again, quality. We're favoring quality and liquidity over corporate and asset backs right now. So I'll point you to these black dots in the agency space, the black dots in the treasury space, kind of neutral in commercial paper now. Supranationals are a proxy of a treasury and agency, but we're kind of neutral on that. But from a relative value standpoint and from a risk standpoint, we are minimizing our exposure to corporates and asset-backed securities. This is just a snapshot of going back to September of 2017 when we started managing the money on behalf of the city to show you the increase that has occurred in the quarterly income received. So these are interest earnings being reflected in the blue bars. And then we show you the yield at cost on your portfolio reflected in gold. And you can see really the impact of the Fed's interest rate increases over the past 2 years and what that meant from an increase in interest earnings and from an increase in yield at cost. However, what I do expect to see is these numbers beginning to drop as maturities occur and those monies have to be reinvested. They're going to have to be reinvested at lower interest rates. We looked at what the Fed has done where the interest rate curve now lies. And obviously those new monies are going to have to be invested at lower yields. So I do expect these numbers to fall. The good news is, you know, your yield at cost is north of 2% today. So you will continue to earn a respectable income for the time being, but as time passes, I do anticipate that interest earnings number to fall ever so slightly. We show you a snapshot of the long-term, or what we call core portfolio here, your operating money. We ended the first quarter at $47 million, and again, a yield at cost of 2.14%. I'll point you to the fact that you do carry a very high credit quality in the portfolio, double A, and then also you are well diversified amongst sectors. However, this was, as we looked at that total return chart earlier, this was a quarter in which diversification obviously worked against you. But what I will point you to is the fact that we have managed your portfolio historically for safety and liquidity, all right? Thus, the exposure to U.S. Treasuries, supranationals, and agencies, we'll call it roughly 60 to 62% of the portfolio in those particular sectors. State statute requires it. Your investment policy and city ordinance require those be first and foremost. That has not changed. If anything, we've increased the level of safety and the level of liquidity in the face of what's been taking place. One other thing to note, the duration of your portfolio is about 1.83 years, and that is in line with the benchmark. And that has served you well over 2019. And we continue to keep duration, which again is a measure of the interest rate sensitivity of your portfolio. We continue to keep duration in line with the benchmark. We think that is the prudent thing to do. Interestingly enough, not to get too far into the weeds, but the folks that that are responsible for the benchmarks or the particular indices, in this case, the ICE, Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, 1 to 3 year U.S. Treasury and Agency Index, at the end of March, this company chose not to rebalance or reconstitute their benchmark. And this is a normal occurrence to rebalance every month. So as a security falls below a year, it's removed from the benchmark, and anything that comes within 3 years is added to the benchmark. And as a portfolio manager, we also then need to rebalance the portfolio so that the risk and makeup of our portfolio looks more like the benchmark. Again, this month end, the ICE B of A Merrill Lynch chose not to reconstitute the benchmark because they didn't want to force people to have to trade in this particular market environment. So what you're going to see in the coming month is you'll see the duration of the portfolio shorten somewhat. But again, your portfolio will shorten in duration, but it's going to be in line with the benchmark. So I don't want you to think we're taking any sort of duration bet in this environment, because that's not our intention. We never want the performance of your portfolio to be driven by a duration bet. We think it's more prudent to find value in particular sectors and individual names within the portfolio to drive performance. So you'll note that I did jump forward here to the performance page. So what I want you to note, I mentioned earlier that this was a quarter in which duration did not benefit the city. So in absolute terms, the portfolio returned 1.84%. That's not an annualized number, okay? That is the return for the 3 months ending March 31st. So again, to put that into perspective, if you were to annualize that number, that'd be a return of almost 6%. Almost 8%. Obviously that's probably not realistic for a high quality fixed income investor. So just to kind of put that into perspective, I caution you against expecting that sort of return for the full year to 2020. This is just a factor of the massive move we saw by the Fed. And again, this flight to quality within treasuries and agencies. So in absolute terms, a really strong number, 1.84%. In relative terms, a really disappointing number for us. We underperformed by 0.94%. But again, that is given the diversification of the portfolio, the spread product that we own. I'm going to go back again for your edification and show you. The benchmark is made up of these two sectors, treasury and agency, whereas your portfolio is made up of treasury, agency, asset-backed corporates, even supranationals and mortgage backs that don't appear on this chart. So that, again, that diversification was this one quarter worked against us. I'll point you out to the full year, the 12 months ending March 31st, the portfolio was up 4.56% versus the benchmark at 5.39%. So that high quality treasury agency again outperforming the overall portfolio. Hopefully these large absolute numbers ease some of that pain of underperformance versus the benchmark. Page 15, we show you a snapshot of the short-term portfolio, total market value of $14,068,000 with a yield at cost of 1.72%. So the timing of the staff to put some of this short-term money to work should be commended. It'd be very hard to go out today and build a portfolio under a year and earn a yield of 1.72%. So the duration on this portfolio, 0.15 years. Diversified amongst treasury and commercial paper, again carrying a very high credit quality of double A. And then the final stretch here, and I apologize, I've gone a little longer than I anticipated, but what we consider to be one of the more important slides in the presentation, and that is what we call our asset allocation slide. I do want to point out that what you're looking at here is a little different than what I initially sent to you. I noted in prepping for the meeting that we did not include the assets of the short-term portfolio in what was initially mailed out. I updated the slide to include those assets as they should appear in your asset allocation or your compliance summary, and I'll provide these slides after the meeting for your to update what you originally received. So what you're looking at here is graphically, you're looking at the limits set by the city ordinance. Those are the gold bars, and how much you're allowed to allocate to each particular sector. The blue bar is how much you actually have allocated to that particular sector. I like to say, think of it as a fuel gauge. However, in this case, you typically don't want a full tank of gas. You want to have the ability to move amongst sectors as that you find value, or in this case, as there's a need to flee to quality, you want to have the ability to go to all treasury, all agency, all cash if need be. So it's always good not to see a full tank of gas. So again, for those of you more quantitatively oriented, the chart shows you the amount permitted by policy, the maximum amount permitted by policy at the sector level, and then how much you actually have allocated at the sector level. And then the next two pages speak to individual issuers. Again, how much is permitted by policy at the individual issuer level, and then how much is actually allocated. I think it's important to note on these two pages that the amount permitted by policy is upwards of 5% for corporate and asset backs. It increases slightly in the MBS space and commercial paper space, but I want you to note that in no case do you get anywhere near that amount permitted by policy, and we do that on purpose. We don't want exposure to any one name. We want to diversify across names. Let me stop there. Again, I apologize, I've gone a little longer than I anticipated. I think more importantly now, I'd be curious to see what questions you might have and what I can attempt to address in light of everything going on.
Thank you so much for your presentation, Council. I would just ask you to alert Doug to raise your hand. I will first start with Eddie if you have any questions since you're here.
I just basically have one question. See if you could elucidate us about this. You said that we are in a deep recession. Are we closer to a V, U, or L shape when it comes to our recession?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. And I think if you ask 50 people, you'll probably get 50 answers. As a matter of fact, our chief strategist, when this started, was anticipating a V-shape recovery. He has since changed his tune to be more of a U-shape recovery. He does think it's going to be a little more prolonged. And obviously, the wild card is the virus. You know, until there's some sort of cure, until there's some better method of testing, and ultimately until there's some sort of vaccine, I think there's really a lot of uncertainty on how that recovery plays out. I think what's interesting to note, and what I'll say about this recession is that, and I think I may have made the point earlier, but it is the first time we've ever had a recession caused by the service sector of the economy. And why do I point that out? Well, unlike a goods-based recession, a service sector recession does not create this excess inventory of goods that have to be absorbed back into the economy before a recovery can begin. So what I'm getting at there is that once the economy does open back up and people go back to work, I think the recovery occurs quickly. Now, it's not going to get way better than when we entered because, again, it is a service-based recession. So what I mean by that is, like, you and me, we're not going to go out and when the restaurants open back up, we're not going to order 5 dinners when we go out to dinner that night, but we are going to order dinner and we are going to be back out in the restaurant. So you will see a recovery there, but you're not going to see excess growth like you would maybe see with a goods or excess inventory recovery. So I hope that's not too, I hope I didn't dance around your question too much, but I think there's just too many unknowns at this point. And I do think, unfortunately, we remain in this sort of recession for longer than what we originally anticipated. So I hope that helps a little bit.
As long as we don't enter an L shape, that would be the best, I would say.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Doug, is there any?
Any other thoughts, questions?
Councilmember Howell.
Yes, ma'am. I believe that this is being taped, is it not? And I would like that all of our employees, who several of them are very concerned about their 401k and with the current situation, whether or not it's going to be revived. And I think the idea that, you know, that your positivity and your outlook, I think this needs to be made available to any of our employees who would care to venture into this so that they can get a better outlook as to where the future is. Because I've heard some of them, you know, oh my God, I don't have any retirement. It's not going to be recovered, yada, yada. And I think that they need to hear from an expert instead of, you know, the rumor mill.
Okay. Yeah, and that I would just caution that if you do that, that you'd be very transparent with the employees that the discussion that we are having in terms of the actual investments are more operating money of the cities and really not tied to retirement. But as far as the economy is concerned, they would be applicable. And I think you're right. You know, I think the Fed and the government is doing all they can to prop up and revive the economy, and it's going to hurt in the near term, but we will survive this. We've done so before, and we'll get through this ultimately.
Yeah, that, you're right.
So, okay. Does that conclude your? Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
I have a question. Is there a strategy that's been discussed by either yourself, Helena, or city manager in regards to that diversification piece? In other words, has there been any discussion around maybe shifting to an alternative strategy that would give us a higher yield?
There really has not been a discussion on shifting to something that would provide a higher yield. The discussion we had really was more about a shift towards more safety and liquidity in face of everything that is going on. And unfortunately, what comes with that, being more safe, more liquid, is not higher yield, right? And honestly, right now, it's hard to go anywhere in the market to find yield. I'll also say that our strategy is not a, and I say our strategy, PFM as a firm, our strategy is not a yield chasing strategy. So we don't try and time the markets to chase yield. Everything we're doing is really a relative value approach where we're looking at what sectors make the most sense and then what names within a particular sector make the most sense. And right now, given the backdrop, what we've done really is increase exposure to treasuries and agencies. Agencies have actually become a little more attractive in this environment, whereas before they really weren't offering, and again, I'm going to use the word offering yield, not to contradict my initial statement, but the yield that they've offered has made them much more attractive in this environment, to the point where we've been trying to add agency names and continue to increase exposure to treasury. So the conversation's been more around, again, safety, liquidity, with yield sort of being a byproduct of all that action.
Okay.
Does that help?
It does. It does. I know you brought up a few times the diversification aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that may have been an area that hurt us a bit because of the diversification. So I just wanted to see, when you forecast these, I'm assuming, you know, the data models also give recommendations, but we're in such uncertain times, frankly, mm-hmm. and because we don't really fully know the extent until we get out of it of the impact overall.
Yeah.
You know, these are important investments for our community,
mm-hmm.
But also the health,
yes,
of our portfolio.
Right, right. Which, again, I think, to your point, is exactly why we've taken more of a wait-and-see approach, and where we can increase safety and liquidity, we've done so in the face of the uncertainty that's out there in the markets.
Well, I appreciate that. Council, is there any other questions?
Yeah.
Council Member Clufus.
Yeah, good morning. I just wanted to thank you for the presentation.
Good morning.
I was curious.
My pleasure.
I was curious if we offer influence on any of the private stockholders that we have in there. I mean, how does the city come into a position where, I assuming it's on the decisions that you guys are making, where shareholders and companies like Pfizer and PepsiCo and things like that? And I only bring that up because of my tried and true investment strategy of just putting all my money in Tesla over the last 3 years. And the whole council has heard me plead for this. So how do we come to the conclusion that these are the best stocks as far as liquidity versus yield versus our city situation?
Okay, so let's step back, and I want to be very clear here that this portfolio does not own any equities, owns no stocks. It owns corporate names, but it owns fixed income securities within those corporate names.
Good.
So
okay.
very different. And the main reason being is for that the volatility, you know, that equities exhibit relative to fixed income. So don't get me wrong, there's volatility in fixed income securities as well, but nowhere near an equity. And so what drives what we do in this portfolio, first and foremost, is state statute, which says that safety and liquidity is first and foremost. Then the city's ordinance, which mirrors the state statute, and then your investment policy, which too, again, references the state statute and the ordinance. So first and foremost comes safety, liquidity, which leads us to, since these are operating monies and may be needed to meet some sort of a liquidity need at some date in the future, we want to make sure that money is available when the time comes, and therefore we invest much more conservatively than in an equity security. Now,
the distribution of the shares that are within those funds that was it was shown on your screen. It was a breakdown, I think, of the equities that are within those funds. It was actually like a literal breakdown of company by company distribution of the shares, I believe, or the proportionality of the fund. That makes sense. I misunderstood the slide then. Sorry about that.
Yeah, that's all right. So that you're right. I think you're referring to the asset allocation slide, the compliance slide, which I have. Hopefully you're still seeing my screen I have up in front of you.
Yep.
So you're right, and these are fixed income securities. So, and you're right, these companies, they do issue equities as well. They trade on a different stock exchange. They behave very differently than fixed income securities, and these are higher up in the capital scale too, meaning that money dedicated will be dedicated to these securities before they are equities. Equities are the most risky part of the capital structure within a company.
Last money out, right?
It is.
Understood.
So I hope that helps a little bit.
It does, totally. Thank you very much. And thank you for your presentation.
Good. You're welcome. My pleasure. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you all today.
Okay. Thank you very much. Actually, I have a question for Matt or Helena about, in regards to what we're seeing, has there been any discussion in maybe refinancing some of our debt to take advantage of the interest rates?
We have not had that discussion yet.
Okay. Just curious to see if that would be worthwhile, viewing some of the larger, like our utility, and if there's a, you know, there will be a penalty for that. I'm not sure. That would be something I think Helena would look at, but it would be interesting to see if, again, since we're going into a budget season that is going to be uncertain, are there areas we can take advantage of, in particular the refinancing? I know last time we did that with the utility debt, there was a substantial savings over the term of the debt, and it just may be worthwhile.
Thank you.
Very good.
Good morning, Mayor. Helena Owls, Financial Services Director. Yes, at the beginning of every budget season, that is something that we do. We do communicate with our financial advisors, and I'll certainly be doing that earlier, as you have requested, to make sure that there's, if there is any opportunities out there, that we can take advantage of it. Absolutely. Thank you.
Do not want to take advantage of a crisis moment. However, if we can actually view this as how we also help support the deficits that we will be facing in certain areas, I think it's important.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you so much for your presentation. It was very thorough. Thank you for taking care of our investments on behalf of the City of Palm Coast, and we look forward to hopefully all getting out of this crisis we're in today and a quicker, healthier return than we're anticipating.
Yes. Thank you, Mayor Holland, and thank you for your continued trust in PFM. We appreciate it.
Okay. We will now move to agenda item number E2, which is a resolution approving the necessary upgrades to the FiberNet infrastructure project, including monthly service fees for bandwidth. Mr. Morton.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, City Council. We do have Don Cooley here today to present some information in regards to a FiberNet technological upgrade for some hardware. And I'll go ahead and let Don get started.
Can you hear me now?
Look at Bill Reichman. I can see Bill.
Oh, there he is. You're right.
Can you guys hear me all right?
Yes.
Yes.
I just wanted to make sure. Can you see my screen now?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Okay. How about now?
No.
This one's invisible.
What is it?
We did this. We practiced this yesterday, Doug. You can you not see it yet?
Not
yet. No.
I'm sorry. I'm clicking on the screen share at the bottom, Doug. Is there a way that you have to let me in, or?
You have to pick the open PowerPoint.
It is open. Is there a way, Doug, that you can just pull it up? Or I have the PowerPoint open on my screen. Excuse me?
Public?
Do you have the whiteboard? I'm sorry?
I'm trying to pull it up with Virginia.
Okay.
John, can you email it?
Sure.
There we go. There we go.
Okay. Are you controlling it or am I?
You are.
Okay. Let me get this out of the way. My apologies. Okay. Are we good?
Yes.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. This morning, I'm here to share information about the much-needed FiberNet and City of Palm Coast telecommunication infrastructure upgrades. These upgrades need to be completed in order to meet the city's ever-increasing demand and the new requirements for the Flagler County Schools' new contract. The Flagler County Schools is an important partner in education and a source of operational revenue for the city's FiberNet. The city has been providing data transmission services, or AKA internet, also known as internet services, to majority of the Flagler County Schools for the past 11 years. I think it's important to note that 80% of the funding for the Flagler County Schools comes from federal E-rate grants, and one of the requirements to receive this funding for these services is that it needs to be competitively bid every 5 years. So recently, we put together a bid and we was competing with Spectrum and a couple of other large providers to win the services. And we were shortlisted along with Spectrum Enterprises. After we were shortlisted, we were invited to go to the Flagler County School facility and present with a formal presentation that demonstrated how our solution would best meet the school district's requirements and help expand their infrastructure. I'm proud to say that the City of Palm Coast was selected. But in order to meet these new requirements, we need to perform some much needed upgrades to our legacy infrastructure. So along this, before I get into details, I wanted to touch on some of the areas where this project fits into the strategic action plan for the city and aligns with the city council's priorities. So one, this is a mechanism for developing and maintaining a strong economy by supporting the growth and development of new and existing businesses. This fiber infrastructure can quite literally transform the Innovation Center, District Center and downtown area by providing access to people who probably wouldn't get it for a more affordable price. It creates an environment to attract new companies and aligns with the city's values. These new, the Tech Beach Hackathon is a great example of if we use our infrastructure, the kind of people that come here to participate in those kind of events are gonna be attracted by the amenities that we have available via the IT and telecommunications infrastructure. This also helps, as in this case, support our education partners, the Flagler County Schools flagship programs. This provides a robust telecommunications infrastructure for potential MedNex partners. As you know, when we're doing all the telemedicine and stuff that's required now in our current situation, the internet and telecommunications infrastructure is ever more important. And then also, this encourages investment in the Innovation District and the Town Center. So as indicated earlier, the FiberNet has been providing data services to the Flagler County Schools for more than 11 years and generated nearly $2 million in operational revenue. In the past, these funds were utilized to support the city's IT internal operations, and the current equipment and infrastructure is well beyond its life cycle and needs to be replaced. The existing equipment is not capable of delivering the service level needed to provide the level of service requested by the Frederick County Schools in their new contract. Excuse me. Oops. So along here, we have some, we have some new requirements by the school. And so these are, I just wanted to lay these out. The new contract needs to be ready and the new system needs to be in place and provide the following. It needs to be fully operational by the end of the current contract, which is just July 1, 2020. It needs to give 99.999% reliability and availability. We have to have 24/7 NOC support, technical support, which we have. We have to have issue notifications to any issues that happen, any break-ins, the line or dig-ins within 15 minutes. And because we are city infrastructure and mission critical, we would be doing that anyways. We're responsible for installing all the new routing equipment that's needed to support them. This is in the city facilities. We have a new upgraded topology that we're going to be helping them with, and then we have to do surveys at each one of their school sites to make sure that our refreshing equipment meets their requirements, one, and then helps them get the equipment needed or spec the equipment needed to make sure that they interface seamlessly with our infrastructure. So one of the next things I have here is this is a price list that we use to bid this. If you look at this is the school sites that they we have been providing services to for a period of time. Back in the early days, you could see that the current bandwidth, currently right now it's at 10, but in the early days it was 100 megabits and then jumped to 1 gigabit. And then several of the facilities are still at 10 gigabits, but now we have an increased requirement to have 40 gigs at several of the facilities, and I expect that that demand will increase over time. Oops, it's automatically moving. So over here we have a 30,000 foot overview of what our new infrastructure design is going to look like that will support both the city of Palm Coast and the Flagler County Schools and the FiberNet. We need to install some new enterprise-grade equipment and routers that are scalable and capable of providing the level of service and redundancy that's needed to support mission-critical operations for both the school and for the city of Palm Coast. So this is a 30,000 foot view snapshot as well. The slide here is showing the minimal core switching and routing equipment needed to fulfill the school district's service level agreement. The new routers and core switches will provide home or internet security and firewalls for the city of Palm Coast infrastructure, Flagler County Schools, and FiberNet. The proposed cost for this, there's a proposed share of cost I have broke down in here. The FiberNet would pay half of it because half of it would be for FiberNet customers, and then half of the funding would come out of the IT services CIP budget because that half of that infrastructure will be supporting mission critical infrastructure for the city of Palm Coast and will serve as a key foundation for replacing all the legacy equipment that's in its end of life at this current moment. The funds needed to be available are all approved in the current 2020 budget. Okay. Okay, so the value-added benefits of us doing this is the new infrastructure is extremely scalable. We will have an increased internet bandwidth where we can actually, it's scalable, we can meet the needs of the city, we can meet the needs of the school, and we can meet the future needs of our future partners with MedNex or for school or any of the technology partners that would come to the region. Also with this, what's unique is the security firewalls and protection that are going to be coming along with this equipment will actually provide us more layers of protection for our legacy downstream equipment. So in other words, even though we can't replace all this stuff that needs to be replaced right now, we remove some of that cybersecurity threat by being able to protect them upstream. Then we'll also be increasing our redundancy, which is super important, especially in the area where we all live. With hurricanes and natural disasters. And so redundancy is super important. The way that we have this set up is, we'll have a dual path out of the city using both COLO 1 and COLO 2. This will provide us carrier and path diversity. And this also, which is super important, creates new revenue generation opportunities. I know that there are people from the clerk of the court and also from Flagler County that are looking and seeing how this all works out. They're really impressed with the network design that we have, and they had indicated that at the very least that they would be utilizing some of our services for backup. So next slide. So this is Geek Talk, but it's a ring infrastructure. It will be providing, as I indicated earlier, carrier and path diversity. We already currently have what they call an autonomous system. And what that means is it's a routing domain that enables us to peer directly with internet service providers. Now, this is super important. When you think about how we have our infrastructure set up, there is called internet transport and internet transit. And most people know what internet transit is because that's what comes to your house or to your business, technically. But behind the scenes, your provider is actually moving your packets the most efficient way to the next place, and they to make sure that they ensure that your information travels at the proper speed, and they're actually handling the domains in the way that you've set them up to be ran. This is important. We have border gateway protocol, so this enables us to set priorities and policies for our infrastructure. So in the event of an emergency, we can actually route traffic, or we can, not that we want to do this all the time, but we can prioritize traffic so that we can make sure that emergency services meet the highest priority, and that our schools, especially in this current situation, have the bandwidth available to provide services to the students that are learning at home. We can also have multi-protocol label switching, which is basically setting up virtual domains for large organizations. So we would be using an MPLS for the city of Palm Coast, an MPLS for the school district, and then also an MPLS to handle and deal with all the FiberNet customers. And of course, we will have system monitoring 24/7, 365. We have the next generation firewalls that come with the built into this new equipment for all the downstream users. So all the downstream users that are, I mean, even customers could quite literally take advantage of our advanced threat protection. And then also we're gonna get the firmware updates and equipment upgrades that will occur during non-peak hours so that it doesn't impact people's business or our city operations. So to support all that, we currently have an agreement with Joytel, and we've been in an agreement and a partnership with Joytel for a number of years. In exchange for dark fiber that they use of ours, we get currently 3 1-gigabit IP transit and then a 30 megabit backhaul to Jacksonville. That's our redundancy right there. It's not as robust as I would like to see, and it's not industry standard, but it is nonetheless our backup. In the future model, I spec'd out 2 10-gig pipes of IP transit, which means it's scalable, and we could never in the near future use all that infrastructure bandwidth. And then what I've also done at this point is provided, broke it down further and provided 10 gigabits to each co-location facility, so that in the event of a cataclysmic event disaster, then we would be able to shift our loads accordingly from each facility. Now, also with this, and this is also a quote from Joytel, I've gotten quotes from several national providers, and this was the best option, our current partner. They will provide us a 10 gig IP transport up to Jacksonville, and also one back through St. Augustine and up to Jacksonville and on to Georgia. And they will do all this for approximately $4,200 a month. And this includes the ability for us to peer. So when we're using the transport, we're actually taking data and not using our current infrastructure bandwidth. We're moving that data very quickly to Jacksonville or Georgia or wherever, and we're letting the providers like the Spectrums and or Cogent and those guys, we're attaching their bandwidth and utilizing it, so we keep ours free to be utilized as we need it. And so Right here we have a project implementation timeline is what we used for the school project, and these are made based off the deliverables in order to meet our contract requirements for the new contract. And so as you can see, because of the COVID-19, we're probably a little bit behind the curve here, but this is the first opportunity that I could get this in front of you, Mayor and Council, to see where we are, get your feedback, and get some understanding of what we need to do to move forward. At this point, I don't have anything else. I know it went through really fast and some of it's kind of technical, but I would be able to field any of your questions.
Council, any questions at this time?
Yes. As usual, when it comes to high technologies, I yield to my colleagues who know a lot more about this than me. But strictly on the financial aspect of it, my question is, had we not won the bid, the contract slash contract with the Flagler County Schools, would this upgrade still make sense to us?
Yes, it would. It would because, all the equipment that we currently have is legacy equipment. It's been end of life for several years, and we've been needing opportunity, and it's been budgeted actually for the last couple of budget cycles to get completed, but it has not. It is super important that we do this for both the cybersecurity threat mitigation and for what we're able to do for providing the high level of mission critical services to the city moving forward.
I guess you answered my question, and you answered to the people out there, because they want to know about this too. Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Council Member Clufus.
Hey, good morning. Thank you, Don, first of all, for the tremendous presentation. I thought it was great. I also wanted to commend you on your hard work that you put forward in ensuring that we secured the contract with the school system. And I know that's critical because essentially we're going to be able to leverage a great partner in the school system to be able to facilitate the upgrades and the underlying infrastructure that needed to be made anyway. So I just want to say thank you, and I wanted to let you know that you have my support and that this plan has my blessing, and that I'm thankful that you were able to come in at a reasonable bid and secure the funding through a revenue source for these upgrades, because at one point or another, this hardware has to be upgraded or we have to get out of the business. And I'm very thankful that instead of getting out of the business, we're able to double down, upgrade our infrastructure, get FiberNet into a position where we have more robust bandwidth and it's actually a facility that has some type of resiliency. And thank you for getting it to this point. And I'm thankful that you have the accelerator to the floor. And I see that timeline and it's very aggressive. I just hope that everything can come together with the COVID pandemic. And if there are any type of holdups or anything because of getting on-site technicians, I'm completely understanding of that. But all I ask is that you could relay that to the council just so that we're aware. But being on-site and without social distancing, I totally get that it may push out your timelines. But thank you and great job.
Thank you.
Doug, is there anyone else?
No, ma'am.
Okay. I have a couple questions. As you mentioned upgrades as far as taking advantage of additional partners,
mm-hmm.
you indicated that perhaps the county is watching and the clerk of court. Has there been a presentation made for the value for them taking advantage, and has a proposal been made to them as far as actually solidifying a relationship?
Not yet, ma'am. I that is something that I wanted to make sure we got to this point first. I do, before the COVID-19 thing, you may not know, but I did have a coffee and meetings with my peers over in the county on a weekly basis prior to this, and this is how I know about their interest. But I would actually, yes, put together something formal and get to forward as soon as we were able to put this together. They kind of want to see where we're going to go and make sure that we're going to follow through.
So I guess my point is why would we not take advantage of the economies of scale and look to several partners? I know at one point the hospital was utilizing our services, and they went in a different direction more because they're looking more of the bulk within their corporate hospital system. However, we do have a very good relationship locally with Advent. And because of the proximity within the Innovation District, as well as laying down, as you said, the cybersecurity aspect of this. I would hope that the time well spent would be identifying additional partners. The school district is a current, you know, user of the system, not a new partner, and so I would like to see, you know, that business plan developed. I would like to see how we are now filling the gaps. And I remember when this conversation first took place, we were not working with a partner, frankly, that was taking full advantage of this asset we have built in our community. So when do you think a reasonable amount of time for us to then also understand the full scope and scale of different partners that we could go to, create a case that would be advantageous to both the city as well as them, including the private sector commercial?
Okay, so I think that's two-prong, Madam Mayor. That's a great question. Thank you. I think it's two-prong. One of the things that we would look at is it'd be two different lines of business. So one, if it's a government partner, it kind of falls into a different realm. If it's an outside source, then we have to actually put together a formal business plan according to Florida state law and present it to you, the council, and you have to approve it. Then we have to have some town hall meetings, all of certainly which I'm willing to do, and I'm willing to work forward on that. It would take some time, several council meetings for the private sector, as we have to meet the Florida state statute and requirements. And I could start begin working on that immediately if that is what you'd like for me to do. And the government side of it, that would, like I said, would be a completely different thing because we can do a lot of that through intergovernment agreements, and that I think falls outside the purview because we're not commoditizing it and competing against the MSOs on the national market.
So as far as the new upgraded communications system that the county has now moved forward with Motorola and also building the very large towers, are we also coordinating with them to have feeder lines of fiber to go in there to speak to the resiliency of emergency communication?
When they ask us for it, yes, I have been communicating with some of the agreements they put in place were prior to my time. So I'm trying to make sure that on my weekly meetings that I interject that our availability and try to make sure that people do know we're aware. I know that there are a couple areas where they've reached out to us. Unfortunately, COVID has been a problem because we haven't been able to do the site visits that we need to do. So that's something we're certainly working on.
And as far as our upgraded plans for our public works facility, which we're trying to make sure we're building it and scaling it out for the future, is fiber running out to that area so we could make it a very efficient, again, taking advantage of the fact that we own the fiber, that is a public facility, it would save on the overall cost. Is that a plan as well?
That would certainly be a plan. I don't have the exact answer to that, Madam Mayor, but I can get the answer and get back to you with that. I've been more focused on trying to get this new infrastructure design over the past couple of months and figuring out how to get it implemented. And then my overall plan would be to go back to the council's priority and making sure that we get all the city's facilities connected to our fiber in the most efficient and cost-effective way.
So, Matt, I guess I would ask you the question as far as you working in conjunction with Don on prioritizing, you know, how we view this piece of infrastructure. I think we've had many discussions as a council to understand that this infrastructure was laid many years ago for a specific purpose by the council identified as cost-saving measures to run all the facilities. Is that still your understanding, and is that a plan? In particular, the public works facility, I'm very interested in to make sure we're again, when we're laying it, laying the conduit, laying the fiber, that that is absolutely a strategy, not only as a cost-saving measure to take advantage of future technology applications, but also the safety aspect.
It absolutely is, and we're considering that across all projects. As you recall, the Old Kings Road widening has a section of fiber conduit and fiber being replaced. So, you know, at the core, my direction has been preserve and enhance the asset, especially when we're in the middle of those types of projects. And to your point, continue to utilize our own asset to the best extent possible in all of our facilities.
And as far as our partner in Diamond Communications, with additional cell phone towers that are being planned or looked at with the different capacity and the need, that strategy was around, again, safety, just due to the fact we had a lot of dead zones in our city. I know Diamond has made advancements on a couple of relationships that they've been successful in. Is it also the strategy of the city to ensure that fiber and the conduit is run to those areas as well?
Where feasible, yes. And I think also a lot of the conversations we've been having with Diamond and with planning is the small cell, how we deploy fiber to support small cell, how we deploy our fiber also to support our smart city with the new AMRs. And if we have that capability through that last mile conversation, which is literally from a trunk or a line to someone's house, not technically a mile. And so we continue to look at those strategies. I will say that a comprehensive strategy or solution, a more formalized plan, is still in development. I would be misleading to say that we have a cohesive strategy across the city right now as we are looking at how to deploy fiber. That is something still that needs to be put together.
You know, I think we're obviously in the middle of a global pandemic that has altered and shifted the way we do business. It's certainly how we work. And so our professionals in the community, including our city hall, the majority of the employees are working from home. They have the capability of doing that, which is advantageous when you're talking about recruitment of different companies. And so I think, hopefully moving forward, if we can scale this, but look long-term. You know, you mentioned MedNex, Don, and I know the university system overall in the state of Florida has a relationship and utilizes Lamb-to-Rail for their capacity. However, I still go back to the fact that we have University of Florida that exists up at Marineland that is a data collection point, frankly. The mass amount of data that they collect for the research that they're doing in that one facility, they don't have the capacity for. Oftentimes, if you speak with the provost over there, he will tell you sometimes they are even having to drive over to Gainesville to ensure that that data is captured and not lost. So I would like for us to have a date when we come back with an actual business plan. And not just necessarily piecemeal this, but rather look at it comprehensively and make some decisions on where the investments make sense. And also that plan of, I know Vice Mayor Klufas brings this up, of that one dig approach. That's a policy, and it should be a policy that's recognized by the city as one that is a responsible thing to do. So anywhere we can, I think we should be doing that, but we should also be looking long term, and I agree that our fiber investment, I believe, if done correctly, and if we have the right entity that's driving those relationships and partnerships, that we'll be successful as a city. So if you can have a sense and give a sense and an update to this council when a reasonable time to expect a business plan, I think that would be helpful.
Madam Mayor, could I speak one more time, please?
Yes.
So I just wanted to let you know, as a part of that, and this is something that I've been working on a lot, as much as I can during this COVID-19, is that we, the city, never really had a really good inventory of what their fiber assets are that are available and what's currently being utilized. And so we're working really hard to try to figure that out. And one of the bigger issues I'm working with the GIS team is we have a lot of information in the GIS, but it's not current, hasn't been updated in more than 7 years. So we're trying to take information from our people who have helped us, our partners in construction who have helped us build this, and try to figure out how to integrate it in so that we can get the level of specifics needed in order to grow this system smartly and intelligently. Two, I reached out to the folks up at Marineland, and I was told, and maybe you have a better contact than me, that they now have AT&T because AT&T built along SR 100, and so that they were filling that need.
That is correct. I think we lost an opportunity a long time ago with that. Frankly, I know in speaking with the former IT director, there was the capability of even pinging up there that would be able to take advantage of that feed. However, I think speaking to the provost would make some sense for us, again, with a long-term strategy, knowing that we have a utility project. Of course, it's not funded. However, the thought is we are running a utility line all the way up to Marineland, and at the same time, the proposal and the presentation is to, again, one dig, run fiber conduit up there as a mechanism to allow for additional capacity to take place. So those are the items that I think, again, when we're looking at this comprehensively, it's not only asset mapping, but however, it's those areas that I know we can be more aggressive in building those relationships and demonstrating that value.
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Cuff would like to speak.
Yes. Councilmember Howell?
Cuff.
I'm sorry. Councilmember Cuff? Is he unmuted?
Well, if you see it.
Okay. Yep, you're on, Bob.
Let's see how this works. I had one minor question on this, and that was the monthly cost to Joytel. Is that subject to escalation, or is that fixed for?
That would be fixed for this term of the contract, Councilor Cuff.
And that's the term is?
It could be, generally speaking, on those, it's 3 years with two 1 year renewables.
Okay. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any further questions, council members? Okay, thank you for your presentation, Mr. Cooley. We're excited that the school district has selected the City of Palm Coast as their partner. Again, it's keeping it local, and we're all in this together, so thank you. Okay, we'll now move to agenda item number F, which is written items. Agenda item number 3 is a resolution approving a piggyback contract along with authorizing the use of budgeted contingency funds for the purchase of equipment vehicles for the enhancement of the stormwater program.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council. We have Carl and Matt Mansell to present. I would say we had a robust discussion. I asked staff to give you a deep dive today on these next couple issues, especially since they are asking to expend city funds and balance that in light of what we as staff are viewing as priorities to keep the business enterprise of the city moving, to continue our commitment to essential level of service, especially in the area of stormwater, wastewater, roads, and those types of infrastructure improvements. So I do have, again, Carl and Matt here to present to discuss why there was a shift in fund and why they believe there's an essential timing component to continue to move our enhanced stormwater program forward even in this time.
Thank you. Yes, good morning, Mayor and Council. Carl Cody, Director of Engineering and Stormwater Department. This item is specifically for purchasing of equipment that will be utilized by the stormwater staff. Last year during the budgeting process, as part of our enhanced stormwater program, we started taking on new roles in terms of what we're doing downstream, because we had a big focus on the swales. We looked to emphasize more on our ditches. And in the past, that was typically just done by our prison crews. We'd go in and we'd whack and cut the grass down. There was no real ditch maintenance done. So last year we added some staff. This year we added some additional staff and created some new crews. As part of our budget process, we had identified a lot of equipment needs due to this additional work that we added to the department, as well as additional staff. We did contract out some aquatic spraying of those ditches, because that was, again, a new task that was added on that was not done. Once we clean out the ditches, we want to be able to maintain them and keep them open and flowing. So we, when we identified our equipment, we were still assessing certain programs and methods of doing business and when we use contractors and what we perform in-house in terms of what makes the most sense, what's most cost-effective. So we had set aside some dollars in the budget. We identified them as contingency in the equipment line item to purchase additional equipment. At the time, we thought it may be for aquatic ditch spraying, but our contract that we have has been very successful, very cost-effective. We don't look at changing that now, but we had other needs, you know, through our process and ongoing of adding staff and really digging into these new projects of how we operate. So we identified some equipment. We had the dollars programmed in the budget. We took out two loans last year at the beginning of this budget cycle. One was for equipment purchases, and one was for some enhancement projects. So we have gone ahead and purchased the bulk of the equipment. The items that weren't identified, we've now identified which pieces of equipment we would like to move forward with. And this item here is really to finish off the equipment purchase off the four, to use up the remaining funds that were in the equipment loan. And they're specifically for a wheel loader, which is right now, Public Works had one that we shared with Stormwater over the past years. But now that we've increased our amount of workload with pipe replacements, with cleaning out these ditches, we really are in need of a full-time piece of equipment for Stormwater staff. It provides a multitude of uses. It can also be used during major disaster events for cleanup as well. It will supplement the one that we already have in place. That's a big cost of the purchase. It's running around $156,000. Another item is for some attachments, so some existing equipment. This is for really debris removal, mowing, clearing, keeping our stormwater system opened up. We could rent these, but the amount of use that we have on those, and that it's just more cost effective to own these attachments. And then the last item that is on the list is for some message boards. And these are really the variable signs that we put up around the city. Stormwater Department does not own any of these message boards. In the past years, we've borrowed them from either Public Works, typically, sometimes utility. One of the things we're trying to do is really promote our public outreach. So when we are out in the neighborhoods, out in the community, one, we're making people aware of these stormwater improvement projects that are happening in their area. But we are getting into a need as well to deal with maintenance of traffic operations. So when we're out replacing pipes under roadways and we're controlling traffic and making people aware of the hazards of the construction as well. So there's a need for that. We have a lot of that work going on. Again, this is another item that's more cost effective to purchase them than to keep renting them for the various number of projects that we do have. I did mention we were using some set aside, some contingency dollars in that fund. The other equipment we identified, there were some cost savings when we were able to go out and finalize all the purchases. So we're looking to use those cost savings dollars as well as the set aside contingency funds to make the purchasing for these various items. We did go out and do some cost verification. We are buying them all off various piggyback contracts. We did go out and seek quotes for the wheel loader as well as the message boards. We have a summary in the agenda item that outlines that. We did a cost comparison showing the rental cost as well, showing how it's the cost effectiveness of owning versus renting. The wheel loader itself, the list price, you know, was right around $228,000. There was a Sourcewell contract that gave us a quote for $173,000. This contract, which we're proposing to piggyback, was $156,000. We didn't receive any other quotes. Those were the ones that were pricing that we were able to receive. So you can see we are roughly almost $72,000 below the list price for that product. The message boards, again, the list price is right around $16,000. And the sheriff's contract is a little over $15,000. We did receive a price from another vendor for a little over $16,000. So again, the piggyback contract for the sheriff's department is the most cost-effective approach for that particular item. And then the equipment attachments, we have specific equipment that we already own. So we're looking to buy the specific equipment for that vendor product rather than do an aftermarket type of attachment. So going with the specific manufacturer, we're going straight off a piggyback contract for that particular item to work with the existing equipment.
Okay,
Carl, just a quick question, Carl. This wheel loader, while it's a nice piece of machinery, the maintenance, is that going to be done in-house, or do we have to outsource the maintenance of this wheel loader?
I've got Roger, our fleet manager here. He can speak to that, but it's my understanding that this will be our piece of equipment and our fleet maintenance will take care of it. Is that correct, Roger?
That is correct. And also, we have a 5,000 hour warranty on this machine also.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you.
Doug, are there any questions online?
I do not see any.
I have a question, Carl. How much more do you anticipate being able to increase our stormwater strategy by the purchase of this equipment? Meaning, I know you're currently stating you've shared it and you've also had to look at leasing historically. So owning it, you really feel today this purchase would give us a greater ability to continue with our comprehensive strategic plan for stormwater to hopefully continue to improve flooding issues as well as aging infrastructure.
Yes, correct. As part of our enhanced stormwater plan, the number of pipes that we're year over year going to start replacing, it's just this is the most cost-effective approach to move forward.
That's all I have. Okay. Thank you, Carl. We'll now move to agenda item number 4, which is a resolution approving piggybacking the Florida Sheriff's Association contract with Tradewinds Power Corps for the purchase of 125 kilowatt generator package.
Thank you. Yes, Honorable Mayor, City Council, again, prioritizing assets for our utility, which has always been a city and council-wide priority to keep our utilities working. We have Carl again here to introduce the item. I think Danny Ashburn is available also for questions. This is replacing, again, a 20-year-old generator that is capable now of powering all of our 47-horsepower pumps at the utility station. So again, another critical piece of infrastructure, sensitive to the timing, but also to keep our utilities and our assets in good shape.
Carl?
Yes, just like our city manager indicated, this is a replacement generator that will be sized appropriately to serve the pumps of this particular location. The other one was in need of replacement. This is just one that's properly sized to replace an outdated piece of equipment.
And what's the lifespan of this generator?
I'd have to double check on that, but typically they categorize them as being roughly a 20-year plus lifespan for generators.
Needed. We need it.
Mr. Matt Mansell would like to speak?
Yes. Yes, go ahead, Matt.
So I've got Roger here. He can kind of read us in on that a little bit.
It also depends on the amount of hours the generator runs. We do normally run them weekly, but in the event of a storm or a disaster, they can run for hours on end. So it greatly depends on the amount of hours that they run.
So you think a 20-year lifespan is feasible?
I would say 15 to 20, yes.
And we just sold one on auction that we replaced over on Rimfire and ended up getting, I don't know, $7,000 or $8,000 for the thing, so.
And so, Matt, this is budgeted for out of the utility fund?
Yes, yes, this is, yes, capital utility project.
And how do we, I guess the question is, when we have infrastructure that is aging out, do we have a long-term strategy to do an assessment and then we budget accordingly year after year? Is that how that's viewed?
It does, and if you want some more detail, Mr. Adams would be glad to explain as he smiles at me.
Yes, we have annual in our CIP for renewals and replacements, and we keep track of the age of these generators, and we'll plug into the CIP on an annual basis when we think we're going to need to replace. Usually they don't end up fully becoming inoperable before we start getting indicators that it's going to need to be replaced in the next few years.
Thank you. All right. Okay, we'll now move to agenda item number 5, which is a resolution approving piggybacking the Omnia Partners contract with Lowe's Home Center LLC for purchase materials and products for citywide use.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, City Council. Again, Matt could answer any specific questions or present. This is really a small items purchasing, you know, standby contract for as needed. It could be for purchasing a tarp. It could be for a small tool that we don't have. No. It could be for a length of pipe or, you know, just literally small miscellaneous materials that facilitate us completing projects to finish projects out. So, Matt, I don't know if you wanted to fill in.
Yes, Madam Mayor and Council. So this is a contract that will allow multiple departments to leverage the agreement with Lowe's. And we do use this daily for materials on various projects throughout the city, as well as other open market resources. So this would just be, you know, one purchase agreement that would be available to us for these type of materials.
Okay, thank you so much for your presentation. Appreciate that. We'll now move to agenda item number 6, which is a resolution approving an interlocal agreement with Grand Haven CDC or CDD for code enforcement services. I would just like to open up by saying I'm appreciative this is finally on the agenda, as this has taken some time to get through. As many of you may know, Grand Haven is one of our largest gated communities within the city of Palm Coast. They actually have a larger population than the town of Bunnell, Marineland, and Beverly Beach. So it is a large community within our community. They are an HOA. They are a CDD, which is an independent governing body, so they act as a governmental entity. A lot of what they do and invest in as a governing body is they have a board of directors, and they had approached the city some time ago as a request, as they have a arborist. They have many trees over in Grand Haven that they contract with internally, that they actually have hired for the services in somewhat of a duplicative manner, and they felt that they wanted to take on this responsibility. And I'm very glad that this has finally come forward, because this is a request that came in a long time ago. But did you want to add anything to that?
Just really quickly, absolutely, Mayor. You hit every point, and I would just also add and echo, it is a very large HOA CDD. They are extraordinarily well and professionally run through their board of directors. This is truly a mutually beneficial relationship. It allows them more direction and guidance over their community, which they've always sought and have done a fantastic job with. Also, candidly, allows us to reprioritize some resources in some other areas. So it is very mutually beneficial. They have and continue to be a fantastic partner and great communicators with us. So I know staff's in support, and we do have Jason and Barbara here to present or fill in any questions council may have.
Jason or Barbara, did you want to add anything to that?
Mayor, I think this is Jason DiLorenzo, Chief Development Officer. I believe you covered everything, but I'm here to answer any questions.
Mayor, nothing from me, unless you have any further questions.
Thank you.
My question is, do we have enough code enforcement personnel to take this, you know?
So this actually takes us out of that situation. Yeah, and they're going to maintain, so it gives us more resources back, Councilor.
Okay, yes. All right. That was, all right, good.
Yes, thank you.
Seeing no other questions on this agenda item, appreciate the effort both by Jason and Barbara for making this happen. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll now move to agenda item number 7, which is a resolution approving a contract for animal shelter services with Flagler Humane Society Incorporated. This is another one that's been in the works for some time. It's good to see it coming. Yeah,
thank you, Honorable Council. Ms. Grossman tells me that we've been without a contract since 2017. So I don't want to steal Barbara's presentation, but has been a lot of negotiation. I think some of the key takeaways are that we strengthen the language on the city's ability and capability to be the directors of determining what a dangerous dog is. We've capped some of our cash liability exposure for surrendered animals, so now it's more of a partnership instead of the city bearing the sole financial liability. And we've reoriented the dispute resolution process. So all in all, I think it's an improvement. There's more consistency with the county. But before I go through the whole contract, Barbara, thank you for coming in today and being here, and it's great to see you.
Good to see you too.
And let me just also add that Barbara has a very challenging job in the city of Palm Coast. Has been doing this for a long time, so I always appreciate the fact that you handle all the enormous amount of calls that your office has to manage. So thank you.
She can handle. She's that good.
Yeah. She's that good.
I'm getting good at this now. 25 years almost. yes, good morning, Mayor and City Council. As Mr. Morton did state, we have been on a month-to-month agreement since October 1st, 2017. And a little history behind that was because there was no consistency as far as a fee structure between the county and the City of Palm Coast. And then which conflicted the issues was that the county was on a 3-year contract, and at the time the city was on a 1-year contract. So until we could get to September or October 1st of 2019, we were in this month-to-month agreement. Now that we have hit the time frame that we can have our agreement and their agreement in a 3-year time period, we've moved together and we're now more consistent with our dollar figures. The other things that did come up were a lot of negotiations, as Mr. Morton said, concerning setting a dollar cap, a cap amount on the dollar, strengthening the language concerning such things as animal cruelty, dangerous dogs, working with the Humane Society concerning initial determinations of dangerous dogs, and you know, the safekeeping of animals, such as being in hospitals. You know, the cost would a certain amount would be incurred through the city, and then it also would be a part of the Humane Society. So there's been a lot of negotiations. I think it's a good contract, and I'm glad that we're finally in a contract.
Council, questions for Barbara at this time?
As long as the animals don't suffer.
I never let an animal suffer.
I know that.
But to that point, that is one significant change. If you'll notice at the end of this agreement, we did offer $2,500 reimbursement towards an emergency generator. I know you're being serious, because the shelter has been trying for some years to harden that asset. And since it does serve a huge population in Palm Coast, to make sure that during hurricanes or other times when someone has to surrender their pet, that it absolutely is a hardened and safe facility. So we are trying to take that mission also very seriously.
I am very serious when I say, as long as the animals don't suffer. Yep. Very serious.
And I personally and my staff take animal control very seriously also.
Thank you.
Seeing no other questions, again, thank you for your effort and your work on this. We all value the Humane Society and understand the significance within our community for the services they provide. So looking forward to a good, positive relationship moving forward.
Absolutely.
Okay, we'll now move to agenda item number 8, which is a resolution for a master service agreement with Tri-County Bobcat for citywide tree services.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, City Council. Again, we have staff here to answer any questions. Essentially, this is an on-call contract for tree removal services driven primarily by code enforcement. The current agreement and contract had expired, so it was solicited out for bid. Tri-County, I believe, who was our previous contractor, came back again with the lowest bid. Again, on-call, primarily driven by code enforcement for tree removal and mitigation services as needed. Typically, these costs are at some point reimbursed back to the city, so it's usually an outlay contract where we seek reimbursement.
Seeing no comments from our councilor questions, thank you so much. We'll move forward with agenda item number 9, which is a resolution approving a continuing services contract for grant compliance assistance services.
Again, thank you, Honorable Mayor, City Council. Again, a continuing contract. I would actually ask this morning, since Jose is not available, if Jason DiLorenzo would fill us in as to the nature of the CDBG and IBTS and any other services we're using this compliance, this management compliance for.
Good morning again, Mayor, City Council, Jason DiLorenzo. This is a annual continuing services contract with two companies, Guardian and ITBS, for our grant services relating to the Community Development Block Grant. So these companies will help us do grant compliance related to our CDBG spending efforts.
Council, any questions or comments on this agenda item? Seeing none, I'll close this portion of the agenda, and I'll open it up to the ending item on G on public participation. Again, this is item G for public participation. If you did not have an opportunity to speak under item D, you may do so now prior to calling in with your comments. If you're listening from website, please mute your computer so when you call in with your comments, there is no interference. If you would like to participate in public comments, please call 386-223-1690. You'll need to hit the *9 to raise your hand to provide your comments. You will be acknowledged by unmuting, and you will hear a message that you have been unmuted. Please begin by stating your name clearly for the record. You will have up to 3 minutes to speak. When there is 15 seconds left in your 3 minutes, you will hear a beep. And then at the end of your 3 minutes, you will hear another beep, and you will be muted at that time. You will not be disconnected from the meeting. All callers will have the opportunity to speak. Please be aware there may be a short pause as we switch to the next caller. We'll begin now. Please state your name for the record, and your 3 minutes will begin. Seeing none, I'll close public comment. Agenda item number H is discussion by City Council of matters not on the agenda. I'm going to start with Council Member Benquino since he is here, and then I'll ask the rest of the council if they have comments to please raise your hand, and then Doug will let me know who's first, and we will unmute, and you can speak then. Go ahead, Doug.
Yeah. I just basically want to say thank you to everyone on the staff. Thank you very much. They're doing a great job, and you know, I've been following what they're doing through Matt. By the way, Matt, you're doing also a very good job, and Mayor, thank you too. On a good side of it, there are some really authentic heroes out there, and just food for thought. At the proper time, once this challenge is gone and all of that, I think we should think of some kind of proclamations / awards to some individuals, because there are some heroes out there, and we have some within our staff. So I just want to put that out there for consideration. Once this thing is all over, this ordeal goes over, just think of some of the heroes that we had.
Thank you.
And thanks for all of them. Thank you.
Great. Doug?
I don't see any more.
Okay. I will just...
Councilor Clufus.
Councilman, or Vice Mayor Clufus.
Hey, yep, good morning. I just wanted to say thank you to everyone who's remote and working through this trying time. And one thing that you touched on earlier, Madam Mayor, is that this really emphasizes the ability for everyone to be decentralized and puts a focus on quality bandwidth being available to everyone so that they can work from their home. I think this has forced our hand in many ways to have the realization that we're in a digital world and that we can operate in a decentralized manner. And second, I would just like to echo what Councilmember Aquino said, that there's true heroes out there, and you know, I don't claim to be anywhere near one of those, but I think honoring them and somehow recognizing their efforts that are going to help get us through this trying time is something that we should definitely consider. But overall, I just hope everyone stays safe, and thank you.
Thank you. And in closing, I would just like to add a tremendous effort by many within the city. Again, to be able to work virtually has been something of true benefit. We have not had any services that have been stopped throughout this entire process, so we have still been able to continue to remain up and running. So to all of the city employees, I would just state thank you so much again, because you know, you are keeping our residents, frankly, at a level of service that they've come to expect and deserve. I'd also like to continue to ask our residents to heed these warnings as we continue to go through this. This is a marathon, not a sprint, and so I know our residents are getting anxious, as they continue to do, so I'd encourage you to make sure that if you have any issues, to please call our customer service desk in an effort to make sure we're being responsive. I think Matt's going to highlight a little bit about where we are in our response, how we're doing as a community. So I don't want to take that from him, but just let our residents know we are still going through a global pandemic. We still have a very serious situation with our drought index and wildfires. We're coming upon hurricane season. And so the more our residents can heed this advice by staying home, it mitigates those first responders that are still providing essential services, our healthcare workers that are on the front line every single day having to counteract this pandemic. And to all those, we do appreciate the residents' support in this trying time. Your help is going a long way to flatten this curve. But we would just encourage you to please stay at home until otherwise noted, so we can all get through this together. Thank you. Okay, discussion by city attorney of matters not on the agenda. Mr. Reichman.
Good morning, Mayor. Good morning, Council. I do not have anything specific to discuss with you this morning, but welcome any questions or concerns you may have.
No, it's just interesting to note, Bill, that you and Bob Cuff actually have the same background. Is that like a lawyer thing? I'm just asking.
No, it's what happens when you have too many papers and not enough time.
I wanted to say that Councilmember Cuff looks like a member of the Backstreet Boys with his microphone on, but I don't know if that was taking it too far. okay, thank you, Bill. We appreciate your continued service to our community as well. So, discussion by city manager of matters not on the agenda. You're up.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, City Council. Just a couple brief items. You know, the response to Palm Coast Connect and the virtual town hall has been tremendous. If you haven't registered, you're not too late. You're never too late, but tomorrow at noon is, again, the third live town hall meeting, answering questions and engaging with the residents. I've gotten tremendous feedback from the community. Thank you, Mayor, for leading that effort, and it's been great to have the professionals, Bob Snyder, Dr. Bickle, yourself, and staff able to answer people's questions. I get feedback that residents feel very connected and engaged, and are very happy that that is happening, and that level of responsiveness is available. I would ask people to continue to help them by signing up through Palm Coast Connect create, you know, an account and have cases. To that point, again, residents are responding. The week ending yesterday, We had 13,000 interactions in a week through Virtual City Hall and Palm Coast Connect, so the results continue to be strong. People continue to use it as their source of information. We also continue to monitor, to the mayor's point, our workload and our level of service. And I just refreshed the dashboard. We're still tracking on an average case resolution of one day. So elevated slightly, but we have a lot of disparate calls right now. And I think one of the most interesting things, I know I shared it with council last week, and hope you saw it, but the field service lightning dashboards, where we can actually see how strong our sewer and water volume calls remain, and how efficient the crews are at now utilizing that tool to respond. So very encouraging to me that I can see that, the infrastructure, the hard work of the city continues to move, continues actually to thrive. We continue to respond very efficiently. So those are excellent metrics. Shifting gears a little bit, you did hear a lot about, you know, the budget and the forecast. You know, we continue to track. Helene and I had another meeting yesterday for an hour going through budget presuppositions and thoughts. There'll be a lot of information coming. We're doing our best. We're meeting with different economists from different sectors of the economy and through different organizations. We continue to track the best we can revenues. Again, I think we have two numbers right now that are telling us two different tales that's hard to sort of discern. One are those unemployment numbers, which are startling, and we have to be aware of that. The other metric is, as I send you every, just about every day, is the building permits. And our building permit volume and strength is as robust as it's ever been. And again, commending our building community for taking this seriously, working safely, and complying with the rules and the changes. Very proud of them for that. But that is a good local indicator of the strength of Palm Coast, I think. And so happy to see that. But we'll continue to monitor and then pretty soon begin discussing some high-level analysis on the budget. We've already made some preemptive moves, just to make everyone fully aware, trying to stop and freeze non-essential spending. We've frozen non-essential hires. We've eliminated, of course, just mainly by necessity, most of the summer help and interns. And so we're taking what we think are reasonable steps now to begin to prepare the city to look at what some potentials could be. Don't want to overreact, of course, keep stating that. We do have a lot of business to do, and we'll figure out a way to get it done, absolutely. But looking at strategies, beginning to put together strategies that respect our community, respect our taxpayers, and also continue to drive the business of the city forward. So should have a very robust discussion at our next workshop on some of the things that we're thinking as staff to continue to move forward and navigate the fiscal end of the crisis. So that's all I had, unless there's any questions. Thank you very much.
Do we know how many local residents have filed for unemployment within our city?
I do not have that figure yet. Part of the challenge, and we continue to look, and we're getting a lot of national figures from the federal government. Our indicator on unemployment seems to lag about 90 days, so we're working with some guesses, but we'll continue to monitor that and hopefully have good information as soon as it's available.
You know, it's interesting if you think about our workforce. Our largest employers are in the public sector and then in healthcare. I think there's a reason why we're trying to drive that medical innovation and technology application is in these moments when you have these types of emergencies, there will always be a need for healthcare, unfortunately, and there will always be a need for medical advancement. So that educational component is going to be important moving forward, and I think that's why we continue to invest in that regard. So our service industry, I think, is going to be the one, from all indications, that is going to probably be the most impacted throughout this pandemic. And so we can try to figure out a way, again, please, for everybody that's listening, please make sure you're supporting our local service industry. Our restaurants need our help. And so if you can go take out or pick up or delivery services out there, please take advantage of that, because I think that'll help our service industry come out of this a little bit better than what we could have expected. So those numbers are going to be important. Again, the impact, the utility billing as well. When will we have figures on the late payments and what that overall impact is going to be for the budget?
Yeah, so by the end of this week, I expect to send out the next update. We had an update I sent to you. We are seeing an increase, obviously, in late payments and delays. We're also modeling right now with Helena and Lauren the delta between our fixed costs of operating some of our amenities and some of the user fee reductions. And so we'll begin to roll out this data now that we have a sense of what it begins to look like. Most of those forecasts will, you know, are just going to be good through the end of this month, but we'll continue to and start sharing that data as we put these last pieces together. We've done a lot of account tracking this week. Helena's done some tremendous work on revenue tracking from 2008 through present, just to do some modeling on what we might expect as far as lagging in sales tax, gas tax, and some other percentages of you know, sales tax for capital, sales tax for general fund, state revenue sharing. And so we're going to compile this information, make it digestible, and share it with council, I would assume starting again by the end of this week.
Thank you.
Councilman Cuff.
Councilmember Howell?
Cuff.
I'm sorry. The masks are hard to hear.
Oh, yeah. Never.
Bob?
Yes.
You're on.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, my time has passed, so never mind. Everybody stay healthy and keep doing what we're doing to help lower the curve.
Thank you. And thank you all to the council members that continue also to support making sure that our residents are kept safe throughout this. That's your support means everything.
We'll talk about it tomorrow a little more, especially the higher risk categories to get tested. I'm pretty sure you'll talk about that with your system.
Yep.
Thank you.
All right. Motion to adjourn.
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Thank you.